Israel's indiscriminate strikes claim more civilian lives across the Gaza Strip as the regime continues battering hospitals and healthcare facilities. Palestinian Islamic Jihad says the U.S. all-out support for Israel is encouraging the regime to continue its barbaric and Nazi crimes in Gaza. And Iran severely criticizes U.S. over its unbridled support for Israel, saying that Washington is responsible for all the regime's crimes in the Gaza Strip. Hello, everybody. Welcome to World News. Let's start this bulletin in Gaza, where Israel's brutal onslaught is now in its 74th day. Regime continues to massacre more people, including children, in the besieged Palestinian territory, with a death toll from its genocidal campaign now reaching nearly 19,500. Israeli strikes against the city of Rafah killed 11 civilians, including 3 children. 9 people lost their lives after the Nusayrat and Deir al-Balah refugee camps were bombed in central Gaza, and the Israeli armies also intensified attacks against 2 other refugee camps in northern Gaza. Hospitals are still the main targets for the regime. Medical sources say Israel attacked Al-Ali Hospital in Gaza City, arresting most of the hospital staff. Hospital is now out of service. Meanwhile, the rep for the World Health Organization in the occupied Palestinian territories said that Kamal Adwan Hospital in northern Gaza is no longer functioning either.
Kamal Adwan, what we understand, is not functional anymore, and we know that the health staff, well, they want to continue like a primary healthcare center, which of course is very sad.
Kamal Adwan Hospital was seen of harrowing events over the weekend. People were buried alive after Israeli forces bulldozed tents housing displaced Palestinians in its courtyard, and that's according to doctors and eyewitnesses. Meanwhile, a coordinator of WHO's emergency medical teams also highlighted the dire situation of hospitals in Gaza, such as Al-Shifa.
The current situation at Al-Shifa Hospital, we're in the emergency department, which is completely packed with patients, as you can see. There are only 5 ambulances working in northern Gaza right now, and patients are self-presenting on donkey carts, on stretchers, being walked down the road. It's incredibly crowded. There are very few staff. Hundreds of patients awaiting surgery. It's just an unbelievable situation. This is a hospital in need of resuscitation. They indicated that there are only 5 or 6 doctors, 5 or 6 nurses, and about 70 volunteers from the community here who are taking care of hundreds of people. They're not able to do surgery. They're not able to provide intensive care. They're delivering babies in the emergency room. They don't have fuel. They don't have staff. They don't have supply. WHO will stand with Shifa and with the whole health system here in Gaza. But what we saw today was among the worst we've ever seen of a hospital, with patients on the floor, patients being carted in on trolleys, blood everywhere, the few medical staff suturing children on the floor, people wailing out in pain. Not enough staff to support them. It's really an unbelievable situation. Something really needs to be done. We've taken some action today. There is an enormous amount still to do. We have to support Shifa, and we have to support the health system here in Gaza.
The Palestinian Islamic Jihad says the U.S. is encouraging Israel to continue what the resistance movement described as barbaric and Nazi crimes in Gaza. Islamic Jihad said comments like those by U.S. Defense Secretary that Israel is waging a self-defense war in Gaza confirm Washington's management of the regime's military. The movement said such remarks are a shameless blessing to the regime. During a visit to Tel Aviv, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin also described U.S. support for Israel as unshakable, pledging more military aid for the regime as it continues its genocide in Gaza. Washington has been facing domestic and international outcry and has grown increasingly isolated over its unconditional military, financial, and diplomatic support for the regime. Co-founder of the Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign, Mick Napier, says Washington tried hard to isolate the people of Gaza from any support, but failed.
America has worked very hard. Blinken was touring the region during the genocide in Gaza in order to isolate the people of Gaza and Palestine from any support across the region. But yet we see that support coming in. I mean, Israel has to be defeated in many, many different ways and probably several times before the threat can be lifted off the people of the region. And this military response from Yemen is very, very dramatic. I think in Washington, they're thinking, what on earth can we do? Can we expand the war to the entire region? But if they do that, there's 7 million Zionist Jews in Palestine and 300 million Arabs across the region who understand what's going on in Palestine, and the overwhelming majority in solidarity with the Palestinians. So I think the options of America, and I could be proven wrong, but I think America's options are limited. They've got two aircraft carriers to defend Israel. Are they going to send another couple of aircraft carriers off the coast of Yemen? I don't think so. I think that in this situation, America and Israel are coming up against the limitations of their power. They've come up against it before, of course, in Lebanon and elsewhere, but they're coming up again against the limitations of their ability to terrorize the entire region.
Israel's brutal onslaught on Gaza has taken a heavy toll on journalists who are reporting on regime's brutality in the Palestinian territory. A Palestinian journalist says he was shot in his thigh by Israeli forces while wearing a helmet and press badge. According to Mohammed Belusha, he was targeted near his home in Jabalia after filming a report about communications blackout in Gaza. He'd earlier documented Israeli crimes at Al Nasser Children's Hospital. In late November, Belusha reported that four premature babies died at the hospital and that their bodies had decomposed. This after Israel forced the staff to evacuate without ambulances. According to a committee to protect journalists, more than 60 reporters and media workers have been killed since Israel launched its genocide of Gaza in October 7th. Palestinian Prisoner Society also says Israeli forces have detained 46 journalists since then. Our Ramallah correspondent Mona Candile joined us earlier and told us more about Israel's recent raids throughout the occupied West Bank as well.
Israeli forces have raided several areas in the occupied West Bank and mainly in areas around Ramallah, where the Israeli military said that a Palestinian was in his vehicle. He opened fire at an Israeli vehicle and wounded a settler. Then he succeeded to withdraw from that area near the illegal settlement of Atarat, northern Ramallah. And then the Israelis have raided the areas around the illegal settlement of Atarat. Closure had been imposed, where the Israeli forces have closed all the entrances leading to the cities of Ramallah and Al-Biri. It seems that the Israeli forces are searching and looking for this Palestinian who carried out the shooting, and he escaped, of course. The Israelis have stormed several shops and homes inside Bir Zeit and Jifna areas, as well as Abu Qosh town, in order to take the recording from surveillance cameras and, of course, as I mentioned, in search for this Palestinian.
Palestinians in the occupied West Bank say they will not leave their lands despite deadly Israeli raids. This comes after Israel destroyed a home of a Palestinian being held in an Israeli jail. Detainee's father says the regime is trying to force them out of the West Bank.
These are the targets of the Israeli regime inside Jenin refugee camp. The regime has bombed and destroyed houses of civilians while claiming it has targeted the resistance forces. This is a strategy that the regime has been using in Gaza. Israel kills innocent Palestinians and destroys their homes. Right now, we are standing on the rubble of a house that belonged to Tamer Meri, one of the Palestinian detainees in Israeli jails. The regime has bombed this house and razed the two-story structure. Adjacent buildings have also been destroyed. This is one of the thousands of houses in Jenin refugee camp that have been demolished during the regime's 60-hour operation. In this offensive, Israeli forces also partially destroyed several other buildings, arrested hundreds of people, and raided hundreds more houses and caused damage. Now we will talk to the father of Palestinian detainee, Mr. Mahem Mar'i. Tell us what happened.
What happened was, thank God, I was not at home. There was no one in the house. I was out of the camp, but when I returned, I was shocked to see that they had blown up my house. Without any reason, they blew up the house. However, we will not abandon our home. This is our land. This is Palestine. And this area belongs to the camp. I'm not going to abandon the camp. I have grown up here, and I am not leaving it. Where are they forcing us to go? We will not leave the camp.
Iran's permanent ambassador to the United Nations says that the U.S. is responsible for all the atrocities committed by Israel in Gaza. Amir Saeed Irbani said U.S. has not just consented to, but actually ordered the crimes. He explained the regime cannot perpetuate its brutalities in Palestinian territories without Washington's all-out financial and military support. Irvani slammed U.S. for vetoing Security Council resolutions calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. The envoy said U.S. has prevented Security Council from fulfilling its charter obligations to halt the Israeli war machine against Gazans. And Iran's foreign minister has expressed confidence the Palestinian people and resistance will ultimately prevail in the battle against Israel. Hossein Amir Abdollahian made the comments in a phone call with Pakistan's caretaker foreign minister Jalil Abbas Jilani. The Iranian top diplomat added Israeli genocide in Gaza once again shows the regime does not abide by any humanitarian or international principles. Jilani also expressed deep concerns about the deteriorating humanitarian situation in Gaza and called for urgent ceasefire and the lifting of the Israeli blockade on the coastal territory. Two foreign ministers also called for stronger cooperation between their respective countries to stop acts of terrorism, like recent deadly attack on a police station in Iran's southeastern city of Rask on the border there with Pakistan. Heavy rain in Gaza has exacerbated the suffering of Palestinians who've been displaced because of Israel's war on the besieged strip. Our correspondent, Muti Abu Musebe, has more.
Another phase of the current catastrophe that the displaced Palestinians who are taking shelter in the yards of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir el-Balah City are going through is coping with the heavy rain that has hit the Gaza Strip. It just took less than 10 minutes for the tents, which are made of scraps of plastic or fabric, to be flooded completely with water, and for the land to be turned into swamps, obstructing the movement of people. The rainwater has at least half a meter deep and overwhelmed the people inside the tents, soaking all existing clothes and covers, albeit little.
This is my tent. It is made of plastic and has an area of 4 square meters. My family consists of 13 members. We all sleep inside this tent. After it rained, the tent was engulfed by half a meter of rainwater that soaked our clothes and blankets. Thus, we hug each other to warm the children. We will remain steadfast no matter what happened.
It was just a matter of a few seconds for the people here to realize that they are trapped between the hardship of having access to the basic humanitarian needs and the demolishes rainy weather. Civil defense crews, who are totally overwhelmed with attempts to recover bodies from the rubble of houses destroyed by Israeli strikes, rushed to help the people. despite the lack of needed equipment.
The people here are living in tents, which were totally flooded with rainwater because these tents are not designed or prepared to endure this heavy rain. Despite the lack of the needed equipment, we managed to help the people using some primitive means. However, these tents need to be rehabilitated in order to provide protection against the harsh winter.
It's worth mentioning that at least 4,000 Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children, have been taking shelter at the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital since the Israeli forces launched a ground offensive in the northern part of the Gaza Strip and in Gaza City.
As we have just seen, this is another dark side of this continuous suffering for the displaced Palestinians here in the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital. It is unfolding with the continuous heavy rain. The people here are living inside tents which are not designed or established to protect them from this kind of unprecedented situation. This is a continuation of the distress that the Palestinian people here are experiencing. Muti Abu Musabbeh, middle area of Gaza Strip.
Global energy producer British Petroleum says it suspended all oil tanker transit through the Red Sea over what it calls deteriorating security in the area. Taiwan's container transportation company Evergreen Line also halted shipments to and from occupied territories in response to recent attacks in the Red Sea. This after Yemeni military attacked Israel-bound ships there. In the latest of such attacks, the Yemeni armed forces performed a special military operation against two ships related to the Israeli regime. Yemen's army spokesperson says the operation targeted Swan Atlantic oil tanker and MSC Clara container ship following crew's refusal to follow the Yemeni army's orders. Sana'a says strikes are in response to Israel's genocide in Gaza and stresses it'll continue the attacks until Tel Aviv stops its ethnic cleansing in Gaza and allows food and medicine into the blockaded strip. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio. Closer. Iran.
Undoubtedly, visiting holy and religious places gives us a special calm and peace in the heart.
Have a nice trip. Drive carefully.
For many years, Iran has been a perfect destination for Muslims from all around the world, having housed some of the most beautiful and stunning shrines in its heart. In Iran, we have many religious sites, just like the holy shrine of Imam Reza, peace upon him, in Mashhad, Shah Abdul Azim Shrine in Ray, Shah Chiragh in Shiraz, Imam Zade Saleh in Tehran, and this time I've decided to visit the holy shrine of Lady Fatima Ma'soumeh, peace upon her, in holy city of Qom, which after Imam Reza's shrine is the largest religious pilgrimage site in Iran.
And 50 meters, turn left.
As far as the holy city of Qom is located near Tehran, I've chosen to drive my own car in this journey. The holy city of Qom is the religious center of Iran and the city with the most pilgrims after Mashhad. The magnetic holy gem shining brightly at the center of this city is the shrine of Lady Fatima Masume, peace upon her, daughter of Imam Musa Kazem, the seventh infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Lady Fatima Masume, peace upon her, is also the sister of Imam Reza, the 8th infallible Imam, whose shrine is located in Mashhad. Many faithful go all the way to Qom to pay homage to the innocent lady. The intricate tile work and the golden dome, accompanied by the azure blue and turquoise color on the minarets, absorb the soul of the worshippers and grant them an unbelievable level of calmness and tranquility. The shrine catches everyone's attention when it comes to architectural beauty and the staggering design of patterns. The floral motifs under the alcoves and the impressive calligraphy and inscriptions in perfect harmony with the spirit of the place mesmerize everyone. The different courtyards of the holy shrine reflect several decades of Iranian history and architecture. Oh, here I can see the golden dome shrine of Lady Fatima Masume, peace upon her. Peace on you, O daughter of Musa, son of Jafar. May Allah shower His mercy and blessings on you. Peace on you. Here I enter the courtyard of Sahib al-Zaman. Oh, there is a huge crowd of pilgrims here, all coming to pay respect to the innocent lady of Qom, as if they're looking for their lost peace here. Actually, real peace and calm. Oh, look at this beautiful pool in the middle of the courtyard. Children also feel calm and happy here. As I have heard, this courtyard, together with its houses, has an area of 8,000 square meters, and it has entrances on four directions. And these beautiful Quranic inscriptions written in Kufic script are very attractive. Mm-hmm. And here I have come to Najm Khatun Shabistan, which is a prayer hall. And it has an area of 8,000 square meters. It is built with special architectural features and is used for holding religious ceremonies. Also, during pilgrimage seasons, when the holy shrine is overcrowded, it is allocated to women. There is a 50-centimeter level difference in the middle part of this Shabistan as a new design that has produced a special effect. Annually, a huge number of people make the pilgrimage to this holy shrine seeking blessings. They gather in prayer halls, not just to read supplications, but to have a stronger bond with the Almighty God and to achieve a wonderful inner tranquility. And now I recite the special supplication of Hazrat Fatima Masume, peace upon her.
Salam ala dama safratillah. Salam ala nukhin nabiyyillah. Salam ala Ibrahim khalilillah. Salam ala Musa kalimillah. Salam ala Isa ruhillah. Salam alayka ya Rasulallah. Salam alayka ya khayr khalqillah.
Today, the shrine of our Innocent Lady of Qom is the cynosure of the eyes of the faithful from all over the world, while the city of Qom has become the center of diffusion of the genuine teachings of the Prophet as bequeathed by the Immaculate Ahl al-Bayt.
Allahu Akbar in Hame Jalal. Allahu Akbar in Hame Shukur. Allahu Akbar in Hame Jalal. Allahu Akbar in Hame Shukur. Allahu Akbar dar rah Ali. فاطمه ایستاده مثل یک کوه. صلی الله علیک یا فاطمه. صلی الله علیک یا فاطمه. صلی الله علیک یا فاطمه. صلی الله علیک یا فاطمه.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and here is some food for thought by Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her, the daughter of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, about the Holy Quran. The Quran leads its adherents to goodwill, and hearing it leads to salvation. With it are the bright divine authorities achieved. His, that is God's manifest determination acquired, his prohibited decrees avoided, his manifest evidence recognized, his satisfying proofs made apparent, his permissions granted, and his laws written.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is A to Z. An Introduction to Islamic Lifestyle. Today's lesson, Justice and Judgment. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Human beings get into conflicts, and at times that requires a third-party judgment to resolve the conflict. The most important piece of the puzzle when it comes to passing judgments is justice. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Holy Quran says, "Surely Allah commands you to make over trusts to their owners, and that when you judge between people, you judge with justice. Surely Allah admonishes you with what is excellent. Surely Allah is seeing, hearing." Maintaining justice is a key ingredient in maintaining social justice, which is the basic building block of a healthy society. The opposite of justice is injustice. Injustice is a vice that ruins the human societies. So if we want healthy societies, if we want societies that are developing and prevailing and moving forward and providing opportunities, providing security and safety for other people or the people living in that society, then one of the key ingredients and one of the key pillars of that society has to be justice. If justice prevails in a society, it will lead to social justice. This social justice becomes that building block of a healthy society. Without justice, there is not developing and progressing society. Okay? So Islam says that if you want to have a society in which you feel safe, in which your family grows, you know, they feel safe and they have the security, then that society has to uphold the trait of justice. So when you're judging between people, again, justice has to prevail. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing justice and judgment. And we said that for a healthy human society, a society that is moving forward, that is progressing, that is developing, that has tranquility in it, it is based on the principle of justice. Maintaining justice, generally speaking, is easy if the person himself is not part of the equation. You know, we all love justice. We want justice to prevail. We want justice to be ruling in the society. But as soon as our own interests are at stake, all of a sudden, you know, some of us may not be or may not remain the biggest fan of justice. Isn't that right? What do we mean by that? Well, if a person is to maintain and uphold justice in which the effects and consequences of doing justice does not harm the person himself, or the person does not face any loss for maintaining justice, then it is very easy to maintain justice. But if a person owns interests, right, and those interests are at stake, or doing justice would be, you know, to the detriment of the person himself, it becomes very difficult to do justice. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Holy Quran says, "O you who believe, be maintainers of justice, bearers of witness for Allah's sake, though it may be against your own selves, or your parents, or near relatives. If he be rich or poor, Allah is nearer to them, both in compassion. Therefore, do not follow your low desires, lest you deviate. And if you swerve on or turn aside, then surely Allah is aware of what you do." See how clear Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is that justice has to be maintained at any cost.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome to the Israel Watch program, which has observed the presence of immense difficulties that the occupation army is facing in the battles taking place in the north and south of the Gaza Strip, and doubts that the War Cabinet Council will be able to obtain for itself an image of victory. This is while the open front with Hezbollah at the borders with South Lebanon remains to be a source of worry, with fears that things might go down the hill at the time the Ansarullah movement simultaneously imposes a siege in Yemen on Israeli maritime trade. I welcome Mr. Hassan Hijazi, expert on Israeli affairs, to discuss these topics with us. Welcome to the show. Israeli media admits that the battles in Khan Yunus, south of the Gaza Strip, are very tough, remains the biggest problem for the Israeli occupation, and is really difficult to overcome. In addition to the difficulty in terms of confronting the Palestinian resistance in Khan Yunus, Zionist military experts admit that Israel is also facing such difficulties in Al-Shujaya and in Jabalia. Mr. Hassan Hijazi, this is a clear Zionist acknowledgement that the battles are tough in Al-Shujaya, Jabalia, and Khan Yunus, and explosive tunnels are the talk of the town today. What is the significance of these statements?
Well, this shows that what the Israeli occupation army rhetoric on having everything under control is mere talk. And the fact that the Israeli army, its soldiers and tanks, entered some places, this does not mean that it took control of these areas. This is proved by the different types of resistance the Israeli army faces, about which Zionist experts and officials are talking, including the issue of the tunnels in which numerous Zionist soldiers were killed. This is because the resistance seems to be using a crafty tactic against the occupation army by putting explosive devices in the tunnels or in their surroundings. And when the Israeli soldiers approach the tunnels, the resistance detonates the explosive devices, which means that Zionist occupation faces something similar to quicksand in these areas, which have become traps for targeting Israeli soldiers.
But they say these are the most fortified places in the world.
Yes, this rhetoric has started recently. During the first period of the war, the occupation regime estimated that the issue might take longer time than expected. And this implies two things: additional confidence by the army in terms of its capabilities, taking the Palestinian resistance lightly, and also the not knowing where it'll enter and what it will be facing. This is a multifaceted failure of the occupation regime, and it has to go over its calculations in terms of how to deal with these areas.
Anyway, this admittance to the difficulty of battles in the Gaza Strip was followed by endless questions on the potential of the occupation army, which Israeli leaders have been claiming is the strongest in the Middle East, but so far has not been able to finish a battle with a resistance front. The additional problem that the Zionists feel and has become the talk of the town in the political, military, and social arenas is the issue of the missiles that are being launched by the Palestinian resistance from within the Gaza Strip towards the occupied land and is causing instability to the Zionists. What is your take on what was said, that the resistance is still launching missiles up to now?
This shows that the occupation army was unable to harm or damage the infrastructure of the resistance. All the missile launching, bombing, destruction was actually targeting the Palestinian civilian infrastructure. The resistance prepared itself really well and hid its capabilities well too. It has engaged in multiple wars with the occupation and has gained high experience in dealing with the Israeli Air Force and its destruction capabilities, the intelligence, and its ability to gather information and build a bank of targets, and it has prepared itself well for it. It seems that the resistance has prepared itself and set up plans for fighting for long periods of time, even in case the Israeli army conducts land incursions into the Gaza Strip. This reveals the deep strategic thinking and long-term vision of the resistance, which prepared itself in this manner and is still fighting with such a high competence and able to achieve its goals.
The failure of the occupation army to annihilate the resistance and release the Zionist captives by force, which led to an increase in sharp disputes among the members of the war cabinet, which leads this aggression. What is the reality and extent of disputes between the leaders of the occupation and the war cabinet? Where can this reach and what is it all about?
Actually, since the beginning of this battle, there has not been any sort of harmony or agreement between Benjamin Netanyahu on one side and the war minister, Yoav Gallant, and the chief of staff, Herzi Halevi. In addition, there's also the newcomer to the war cabinet, who is Benny Gantz. This phenomenon was interpreted in many ways. Leaks also showed that Benjamin Netanyahu has his own agenda that is related to his political future and how he is trying to exploit the war for this end. And he seeks to fulfill his own personal and narrow interests that are internal and political, at the same time as Israeli media claims the others are focusing on the military effort. However, the others also have their own plans to attain political goals in terms of public opinion, which paves the way for the coming phase.
And this leads to divisions?
Yes, this is a reflection of the divisions. Each side is putting effort to gain more cards and blames others for failure.
So each of them has his own plans and each of them is working for his own political gains now and in the future. How will this issue be reflected on the situation of the war on the Gaza Strip?
Well, there is consensus on some general issues related to this battle, but there are disputes over the major issues of this battle. So, for example, the vision of the future of Gaza after the war is not a united one. There is no consensus on this, even on the level of public opinion, and not only Israeli officials. There's no clear vision, there's no clear strategy to exit the war, and this worries the Americans, who have come with a clear strategy of a two-state solution with a Palestinian Authority at the same time. At the time, Benjamin Netanyahu does not accept this and is supported by the extremist far right. At the time, the left has no clear vision and is also not ready to accept a Palestinian state. And this pushes the political reality and the Zionist people into trouble.
The imagery of victory the Zionists are trying to find will not be realized, even if the occupation regime succeeded in killing the leader, Yair Sinwar, and that is occurring to Israeli media. This failure to achieve the goals of the aggression and the increase in disputes which followed in the war cabinet yields one result. The image of victory that the Zionists are looking for will not exist, as former occupation, as Army Chief of Staff Dan Halutz said. So Mr. Hassan Hijazi, Dan Halutz said there will be no image of victory in Gaza. What does this mean?
This means there is a confession to failure and defeat, and that the Israelis must not bet that the Israeli army will achieve an image of victory through the surrender of Hamas or its members, abducting or assassinating its leaders. This issue reflects that there is an acknowledgement that the war will not realize the results of which the occupation leaders have raised earlier. It will not be able to break the resistance. The resistance will remain steadfast with all its capabilities in Gaza. The maximum that the occupation regime can aim for is a period of calmness in the coming phase, and things might be worse maybe after a few years or so. The major point here is that despite all the supporting circumstances, the occupation regime and army failed in realizing a real victory against the Palestinian resistance in the Gaza Strip.
Moving on to the South Lebanon and the front, Hezbollah started in support of Gaza, its people and resistance in the face of the Israeli aggression. There's a lot of analysis in Israeli media about the current and future wars, which will be more painful if it takes place. Therefore, the damage that Hezbollah will inflict on the occupation regime in any wide-ranging war that might erupt cannot be eased except by removing the Hezbollah Red One forces from the borders. Otherwise, this means that the settlers will not return to the northern settlements. Mr. Hassan Hijazi, what do you think of these Zionist estimates on the losses the Israeli occupation army will be inflicted with in any coming wide-range war with Hezbollah? And as we saw, the residents of the northern area will not return unless the Red One forces are removed from the borders, and this is a major fear in their opinion.
Yes, well, the initial estimates of the Israeli regime have always been mistaken, and they always had to reevaluate everything and make correct estimates again, especially as it always gets surprised by facts and calculations that the Zionists did not see as coming. And this means that the war can be more costly and more dangerous. How will things turn out in this war? This is something no one knows or can estimate. Its scope, how it will happen, what the capabilities of the resistance are. The occupation makes its estimates according to whatever it sees, but there might be hidden elements that can change the scenario majorly. And this shows that the Israeli occupation keeps falling into the same mistakes in terms of its estimates. And this is what we saw in the failure of the Israeli intelligence in foreseeing the 7th of October events. This must push Israeli commentators and analysts in becoming more modest in terms of reading the future. Now, in terms of the settlers, it all depends on who will guarantee this issue and how will this decision be implemented, and are there actually options before the occupation on the political or military levels that can change the reality. Based on prior experience, the occupation regime has lost the initiative, and any error in its calculations will make things worse for its army and settlers alike.
Despite all that is said about a war with Hezbollah, it seems that the decision in the Zionist war cabinet is that there is no war in the north, simply because the occupation army cannot tolerate such a war simultaneously with the war on Gaza.
Well, Shimon Schiffer is not a simplistic mind in terms of reading the scenario, and he is reflecting the state of confusion which exists. There is no clear image in terms of the front against Gaza, the northern front, or both fronts together. And this reflects their general image inside the Israeli regime, which is in a major state of chaos and defeat in its history.
Moving on to the threats made by the Yemeni armed forces to the ships heading to the Israeli entity, in case food and medicine does not enter the Gaza Strip, which Tamir Khema, former head of the Amman intelligence, sees as a trade siege on the entity. Mr. Hassan Hijazi, what is the extent of Israeli fear from what they call the Yemeni Ansarullah siege on Israeli trade and maritime activity?
There is no doubt that this issue is a major challenge for the occupation regime, because the siege can have a direct economic impact and can affect the daily life of settlers. The prices of goods and insurance costs will witness a huge increase, because these ships will be forced to change route to come across Africa and the Mediterranean Sea through the Strait of Gibraltar. And this will also cause a delay of almost 1 month for goods to reach the occupation regime. All this will directly reflect on the life expenses of the settlers due to the increase in the prices of goods and commodities that Israel majorly imports from East Asia.
Commenting on the siege and the deteriorating economic situation in the occupation regime, Benjamin Netanyahu claimed that the situation is good and there's nothing to worry about, which angered one of the Knesset members. The statements of Netanyahu were mocked in Israeli social media platforms, and these are a few comments.
Mubi, what else? 1,300 dead, 250 captives, a collapsed economy. What else?
Runit.
This is life. We have been at war since 2 months, and the one accused of being responsible for the killing of hundreds of people and the captivity of hundreds is running an electoral campaign. A collapsed economy, soldiers being killed at battles, civilians being killed due to inconsiderate distribution of arms, and the stupid people will continue to vote for him.
Meir.
Netanyahu and the cabinet must be replaced. They failed on the military, security, political, and economic levels. Israel is now a defeated army and a collapsed economy.
Ari.
Dead, injured, captives, the Gaza Strip is destroyed. Soldiers sinking in the swamp of Gaza. Thousands of outlaws, a collapse in the economy.
So, Mr. Hassan Hijazi, we see a tough campaign against Netanyahu due to his statement. It seems that discontent has reached a new height. How will this impact Netanyahu's political future?
There is no doubt that Netanyahu is detached from reality, like some describe it, and he is trying to ignore the major issues of which the Zionist economy is suffering. The economy is paralyzed in the north and south. Some of the workers joined the lines of reserve soldiers and are engaging in war. There is a budget and an economy that will suffer from deficiency due to military expenditure. There are increasing woes on the economic situation, whether due to the military expenses or the direct and indirect damage, and Benjamin Netanyahu speaks as if everything is okay. There's no doubt that Benjamin Netanyahu, his family, and those surrounding him are living in a different reality than that of the people.
What does he intend to say?
Benjamin Netanyahu wants to ease the burden and say that he did not push the Zionists into a crisis. The crisis is related to the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza, and he bears direct responsibility, in addition to the general crisis the Israeli community suffers from on the economic and social levels.
Mr. Hassan Hijazi, expert on Israeli affairs, thank you for your participation in this episode of the Israel Watch program. Thank you. Until we meet next time, goodbye for now.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
One aspect that often goes unnoticed when analyzing the situation in Palestine is what can be described as the occupation of everyday life. This refers to how the Zionist colonial regime and its settler colonial project are present even in the smallest details and in the most intimate spaces of Palestinian lives. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV noted, a political analysis of intimacy, particularly within Palestinian homes, will help illustrate how colonialism infiltrates even the most private corners, typically thought to be secluded or, at the very least, less exposed to the colonial entity. The intimate focus on politics also enables an observation of how the daily and routine presence of occupation affects the lives and interpersonal relationships of the colonized. For instance, through this intimate perspective, it's possible to analyze how receiving a home demolition notice impacts people psychologically, or how rebuilding a home each time it is demolished can ultimately affect the mental health of those involved in that process. This type of analysis should not be interpreted as a departure from studying colonialism, but rather as a means to highlight how invasive colonialism is, penetrating households. In other words, a perspective on the macro-politics of intimate spaces complements the macro-political analysis of colonialism. Palestinian homes are regularly evacuated, demolished, and raided. This violation of intimate space is neither recent nor solely provoked by the supposed reaction to the events of October 7th. For instance, in 2016, data published by Israeli regime media itself indicated an average weekly demolition of 20 structures. Another example of this home destruction was documented by the Palestinian journalist and author Ramzi Barud, who recorded in 2017 how the Palestinian Bedouin village of Al-Araqib was demolished more than 116 times. In addition to house demolitions, there are other ways in which the Zionist occupation manifests in everyday spaces, such as state harassment aimed at forcing residents to abandon their homes and eviction orders, which in the Palestinian colonial context could be defined as legitimization of that harassment. It's quite common for Palestinian families to be expelled from their homes where they have lived for decades. In the occupied East Al-Quds, there are areas where settler movements, supported and protected by the regime, military and legal structure of colonial regime, attack and intimidate Palestinian residents in order to evict them from their homes. Geographer Sabrien Amrouf highlights how violence and the occupation of daily life manifest in the military perception applied to Palestinian homes. In an infographic published in 2014 by the Zionist regime army titled "When is a House a Home?", a typical Palestinian home was portrayed from a militarized perspective. The bedroom was identified as an operations room, while the living room was considered an arms depot. Through this discursive exercise, the Zionist regime army justified its attacks on infrastructures that are typically conceived as civilian spaces, places of refuge and protection. This discursive process connects the two aspects of Zionist colonial occupation: the macrocosm represented by homes and intimacy, and the macrocosm represented by Palestinian territory as a whole. In both realms, the objective is to dispossess Palestinians of their homes and lands. Both colonial records highlight the entire